everyone. This is Kathy Mason from MasonWorks Marketing here on Conscious Business Zone today with my friend Brian Smith. Hi.
Hi, Kathy.
I am so excited to talk to you. It's been a while during all of this craziness, and I can't wait to hear all of the great things that you're doing to help people. Brian, so you know, has a incredible gift that he can help people work through the pain of losing a child after his own experience. And he's a grief guide, a life coach, a small business consultant, and just an incredible good guy. He's on boards of Soulphone Foundation, which I want to hear a little bit about them. I don't know anything about them, and helping parents heal. And I'm just so glad to know you, Brian, because everyone is going through grief right now of some level of maybe whether it's the loved ones, although there's so many people of all ages leaving the planet now. It's wild. But if it's not that, it's the grief of losing the future they thought they were building, which is everyone in the world has that experience right now. So where should we start? What would you like to talk about? First, would you like to talk about how this, for people that don't know you, how you got into this field? I see your daughter's picture in the background. Do you want to start there? So have a way to know what's going on?
Yeah, I think that's a great place to start. My daughter is the reason why I'm doing this. And as you see, she is in my background. This is my new studio, by the way. You're the first one to see it, Kathy. Cool. So this is my daughter, Shayna Elaine. She was 15 years old when she passed away suddenly in June of 2015. She was a relatively healthy girl. She had a couple of minor health issues, but she just passed away suddenly one night, June 23rd. She went to bed on June 24th. She didn't wake up. So needless to say, that was a shock to my wife and myself and my other daughter, Kayla, who was 3 years older, or is 3 years older, but she was 18 at the time. So we went on quite a journey of our own. I was someone who was scared of death my entire life. I had a really intense fear of death, which is called thanatophobia. I didn't know the name of it at the time, but it really caused me a lot of problems growing up because of that, some toxic religion things in my background. So I'd done a lot of studying before Shayna transitioned. But so that's why I do what I do. And that was, as I said, 7 years ago this past June. About 3 years ago, after volunteering with Helping Parents Heal for about 3 years, I decided to become a life coach and a grief guide, try to add to all the work I was doing with volunteering with parents to make it more formal for people that wanted to reach out to me that were outside of the organization, help them go through this process. So I do help people go through grief, primarily parents. That's most of the people that I reach. Because of my experience, I can help other people, and I have. And I'm actually getting a couple more certifications to help people with different things to expand my tool set. But I primarily work with parents because unless you've had a child transition, you really just have no idea what it's like. And when it happens, you feel like your life is completely ended. And I want to be able to help people get through that period of time when you feel like, what do I do next? Can I get it? Can I get better? How do I get better? All those questions.
Yes, I only have one child, so I can't imagine what that was like. And I can't imagine the interim time period as you're healing. I mean, you and I know each other from the IONS group, from the International Association for Near Death Studies. So we know that life goes on. But not everybody was taught that or has read the books or listened to the speeches and spent the time studying the near-death experience, which is a precursor to the all the way.
Yeah.
It's like and it's also a wake-up call for us here to live. So when you work with people, are a lot of the people right away when you meet with them and try to help them? Are they in touch with their loved one? Are they thinking they're crazy because they experience the child or the loved one in the ethers?
You know, that's a really good question. We live in a society, surprisingly to me, that most people do believe in life after death, even though we live in a very materialistic society. But people believe in it on a pretty superficial level where they don't really think about it a lot and they don't really know why they believe it. Even people who are religious, they believe it because the Bible tells them so or because their pastor tells them so, but it's not really based on evidence. So what happens is when that's put to the test, when your loved one actually transitions and crosses over, your whole world gets shaken up. You question everything, including that. Are they really still there? It's just wishful thinking. The other thing is, as you alluded to, most people or a lot of people have some sort of after-death communication after their loved one passes.
Yeah.
But a lot of times they think they're crazy. They might hear their voice. They might smell the way they smell. They might smell cigarette smoke. They might notice animals acting weird, birds hanging around them, stuff like that. And they'll say, is this just wishful thinking? You know, maybe I'm crazy. I had this dream about them. Was that a dream visit? So for the most of the people that come to me, they're open to the idea, but they're not fully convinced. And they need a little help. They need a little affirmation that, no, you're not crazy. No, it's very normal for people to experience some sort of after-death communication after the loved one transitions. No, it's not just wishful thinking. No, it's not just based on you have to believe. I'm a firm believer in, you know, faith is great, but knowing is better. So if you can know, if you can study, and you and I, you said we're both connected through the IANS. When we had local meetings here in Cincinnati, I would go to the IANS meetings religiously. Yeah. Because hearing people that have been there, there's nothing like hearing people who have been there. And there's nothing like looking them in the eye and hearing their stories and seeing how it's changed their lives. I mean, there's just so much evidence. And in their death experience, and there's mediumship, there's after-death communications, there's instrumental transcommunication. There's all kinds of reasons to believe, but I believe the number one reason is the NDE. Someone who's been there that can come back and tell us what it's really like. So I think it's a blessing to all of us that the people that have those share them with us.
Well, the thing also that I just love about what you do is I love that because of your background and coaching and business, you're able to create a way for other people to process, because that's what you know. And it's because you're a guide, it's like you're a lighthouse showing them the way, because you can talk about your pain, but you can also talk about the joy that you know about what you're doing now is totally in result of what happened. I mean, you would still be working in a corporate job or something in doing sales if your daughter wouldn't have died. And now you're on the board of helping parents heal and what, Soul Phone? We'll have to ask what that is. But anyway, but just think, your whole life changed.
Yeah. And the thing is, when someone that's close to you as a daughter or a parent or a spouse, you know, passes, it does change your life. And, you know, a lot of people come to me and say, you know, when am I going to be able to get back to my old self, or will I ever be my old self? And I always look at them and I say, I don't think so. And really, I frankly hope you don't, because why would you want to waste this pain that you're going through? You can use this as an opportunity to grow. So it can be confusing to people when we say things like, if my daughter hadn't died, I wouldn't be doing this. Therefore, they'll think, well, fill in the blank. Therefore, it's good that my daughter died. That's never what we're saying. We're never saying that it's good that anyone has left us. There's still pain associated with that. It's still, I wouldn't call that in and of itself a good thing. But what it does is it gives us an opportunity to choose. We can choose whether we want to get better or get bitter. We can choose whether we want to grow or whether we just want to go into a cocoon. And the natural reaction, and my reaction, frankly, at first was, I don't care about growing. I don't care about healing. I don't care about getting better. I don't even really want to be here on this planet anymore. You know, why would I want to keep doing this? But you talked about that lighthouse. When I found Helping Parents Heal, and I looked at Elizabeth Blasson and Mark Ireland, who were the two founders of the organization, and I started looking at people who were 7 years out, like I am now, 10 years out, 15 years out, and I saw them laughing. I saw them joyous. I saw them having a sense of purpose in their life. And I saw them actually dedicating their lives to the memory of their children about 3 years ago. You know, and this was 4 years after Shana passed. This is not a simple, easy process. But about 3 years ago, I'm like, I don't want to waste the pain that I've gone through. How can I use this to help other people? And I feel like Shana and I are a team. I feel like we've always been a team where we're connected. This is why, as I said, I've got my new studio here that I'm still working on. But the first thing I put up was that picture of Shana, because she's my partner. She's with me over my shoulder at all times. Oh, that's why I do what I do. If she hadn't passed, I would not be sitting here talking to you. I'm not going to say that would be better or worse, but it would be different.
Well, okay. So I just have to ask a couple of questions, because change is painful for people, and you're saying use the pain, use the potency of the pain to dive deep into all of the programming, if you want to call it that. I don't know what else to call it, but it's the social constructs that we grew up with that our society and our parents tried their best to give us a manual of how to succeed as a human. And they didn't know either. But right. but so talk about that, because I think people get stuck in every level. It's not just from losing a child, but all of their growth is either the fear, pushing through fear, or it is acknowledging that fear and finding out the source of it. Because once you find out the source of it, you can manage it, or you can pat yourself on the back. Oh, I did it anyway. So could you talk a little bit about that? Because I think most people get stuck because as soon as fear or pain shows up, there's a stop sign instead of put your foot on the gas. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think you've probably, from everything you've done, you've figured out a way to help people put their foot on the gas.
Yeah. And first I want to say that's so much I could say about that. Pain and fear are something that we are biologically evolved to avoid. Where your body, your ego that wants to keep you alive, and your body is designed to move towards pleasure and away from pain. So no one should ever feel bad about wanting to avoid pain. We'd all like to live lives of luxury and leisure and never have any pain. But I believe that pain was built in as part of the experience. I believe we do come to Earth to experience the pain, the discomfort. There's something about the human condition that pain drives us to change. Pain drives us to grow. And again, evolutionarily speaking, we as biological creatures, if something is working, we're going to keep doing it. It doesn't make sense to change it. If I'm doing something and it's working, why would I do anything different? So pain comes along, or something that's not working comes along, and it forces us to choose a different path. So whether you believe this metaphysically, that we, our higher selves or God or our guides or whatever sends this pain to us, or whether it's just you believe that some things happen, just stuff happens on Earth, we all experience pain. And we always have that decision tree, which way are we going to go? So the natural thing is to kind of shut down. That's what we do. We withdraw from the pain. But if we push through it, we can actually experience a growth experience. And that's what I try to push people to do. That's why I named my business Grief to Growth, because take that grief that you've got and transmute it. You know, we're alchemists. We can take one thing and change it into another. Take that grief and change it into growth. And there's a way to do that. It doesn't feel like it's possible when it first happens. I would have been the first to tell you that it wasn't possible, but I'm here to tell you now, 7 years later, it absolutely is.
So the Other thing I wanted to say is I had a friend who was a healer at night and a commercial real estate lawyer during the day. Mm-hmm. And he and his wife had this beautiful marriage, and he passed. It was just like this quick thing. And after he passed, lights would go on, music would, I mean, he was trying to connect with his wife. And what I noticed is everyone was right there for her right away. But then after, you know, years later, people just don't know what to say, or they don't know how to support someone who's gone through this. Do you have any recommendations for how we support someone, especially now with so many people passing, how we support people in our lives that have gone through this?
Sure. Well, first, I'd like to address the people, the grieving person. It's normal, it's natural that when you go through this process that you're going to lose people that you would thought would have been there for you. It's not because they don't love you anymore. It's not because they're not good people. Your pain makes them uncomfortable. Your pain reminds them of their own mortality or the mortality of their children or their spouse or whatever it is. And they just kind of want you to get better. A lot of times people will push you to get over it. It's been 6 months. It's been a year. Why aren't you any better yet? You know, aren't you? Why are you still talking about that person? So a lot of times they don't understand. So I want to tell you as the grieving person that it's not you. You're okay. This happens to a lot of us, if not all of us. In terms of the people that are dealing with that grieving person, I've talked to a lot of people in grief. The number one thing people in grief want is to be heard. They want their pain to be witnessed. They want it to maybe be acknowledged. They don't want you to necessarily fix them. They don't feel like they're fixable. First of all, it's not your responsibility and you don't have the power to do it. But it's to be there to listen to them, to support them in whatever way is comfortable, to help them know that what they're going through is normal. That a lot of those early things that we go through in grief, you know, they do go away. We feel like we're brain damaged. I just spoke with someone last week who just had a child pass in May, so 3 months ago. And this person was telling me, I can't remember anything. I can't read. I can't focus on things. And people feel like, you know, is it early onset Alzheimer's or what's going on with me? It's grief fog. It's grief brain. We're so overwhelmed that our brain actually kind of shuts down because it can't process everything we're going through. So that was a lot to talk about, both the griever and the person that is dealing with the griever, to hopefully not go through that thing where people withdraw, but understand that, you know, all people really want is to be heard, and they want to be witnessed.
Well, the reason I asked is that, you know, years later, here's 7 years later, it feels like it's better. there's a whole bunch of people around at the very beginning, but then they sort of thin out, mm-hmm. and there isn't the same kind of support even 2 years later, a year and a half later, and you're alone on the holidays and you're alone on these times that you are longing for this person. And so that's why I wondered if there was suggestions about just put on your calendar to call, just touch your face, just remembering.
Yeah, I'll actually tell people when someone passes, I will be there for you in 6 weeks or a year or 6 months. You know, everybody comes around at the beginning. Everybody's dropping off casseroles. Everybody's calling to see how you're doing. So I'm like, once that period is over, then I'll step in, you know, and check up on you. So you're absolutely right. You know, put on the calendar birthdays of the significant other that passed, the anniversary date of that person. Again, a lot of times people, they don't want to bring up the person that passed. They're like, I don't want to make you sad. And I've had people bring up Shayna and, you know, I might start crying. Oh, I'm sorry I made you cry. You know, or I don't want to make you think about that person. I guarantee you, when you lose someone that close to you, you think about them all the time. And we want to talk about them. So yeah, remember that person. You know, I've got a friend right now, his wife just suddenly passed, you know, a few months ago. And, you know, his anniversary was a couple of days ago. So, you know, remember to acknowledge that day, because they're still thinking about it. They're right. Even though they're not here physically, they're still thinking about those things.
Right. So, for your work, have you had people really change your, I mean, you changed your life. And I think a lot of the near-death experiencers, at least in my experience, it's like they got their superpowers mm-hmm. after it. Have you seen a lot of the people that you help and you, even small business consulting, all of that, where this got them to really go for it?
Yeah, I've seen some of that. You know, the thing is that we have our society values certain things, right? So like changing your career, you know, so some people might say, well, I need to change my career. I need to stop doing this and start doing this. We find out from the NDE that the things that are, we call big are not the things that they call big on the other side when we have our life review. It's the little things that we do. It's helping someone out. It's smiling at a person in line at the grocery store. It's you know, helping, you know, going, taking a casserole to a neighbor or something like that. So I don't encourage people to say, oh, this has happened, so you need to change your life. You need to change your career. In fact, I was talking with a woman whose daughter had passed, and she's like, I'm just an engineer, and I don't feel like my career really makes much of a difference in the world. I want to, you know, just do something more spiritual. But this person was in a season of their life where they had a young daughter still there, and this daughter was involved in a lot of things. And my advice there was like, be a parent. Just be a great parent right now. That's what your role in life is. If you're a housewife, be a great housewife. If you're a stay-at-home dad, be a great stay-at-home dad. Whatever it is you do. If you're a grocery store clerk, you know, just be present in the job that you do. So another saying I like, and I like a lot of gardening saying, is grow where you plant it. So wherever it is you happen to be in your community, in your job, in your church, whatever it is, just be better there. You don't have to change what you're doing. For me, I'm 61 years old now, and I was doing this business with my wife and I were doing for the last 20 years, and was really kind of tired of it and really didn't, you know, enjoy it much anyway. So this was a great chance for me to have a third or fourth career at this point. So for me, this was the thing to do. And I enjoy speaking. I enjoy the, you know, podcasting. I like writing. So it gave me a chance to do what I've always liked doing.
That's great. Yeah, I think that's great. And I think what I guess I was hoping you would say is fearlessness came out of a lot of this, because you had fear of death and you had to process your fear of death. Mm-hmm. And now you fearlessly went, okay, I'm going to do something else. And I think that society in general is going through these losses that are of the old way, mm-hmm. which, I mean, especially our generation, we already had this vision of how this next 30 years was going to be, or
right.
25 years was going to be. And oops, then the lockdown came. And so are you seeing a lot more people during this past 2 years than you had before? This is an interesting time to be doing what you're doing.
Yeah, you're right. So to get back to your point about fearlessness, absolutely. One of the big side effects, for lack of a better word, of the near-death experiences is a loss of fear. Right. People say that once you know that we truly die, then you're not afraid to live. So yes, there's an absolute fearlessness that comes with this understanding. But what I push back a little bit against is people saying, okay, this happened. Now I have to completely change my life, completely upend my life. Because, Frank, a lot of times people that have had NDEs also end up getting divorced because you just become different people. So that's one of the side effects as well. But yes, absolutely. When we understand that we have nothing to fear, then the fear goes away, right. And we can live more full lives. And I think it's really interesting. Young people right now, my daughter is 25, and I look at her generation, you know, their big thing now is YOLO. You only live once. So they're going for it. So when I was her age, I was saving money and, you know, think, you know, put your money in a 401k. We didn't have 401ks, but put your money in your retirement fund and buy mutual funds like that. she travels. She and her friends, they travel, they go out to eat. They're living their lives. And so I think that's one of the good things that's kind of come out of the pandemic is people have realized that life is not promised to any of us. We see the planet on fire right now. We don't know where we're going to be in 10 or 15 years. So people are more present with their daily lives and more concerned or more interested in experiences rather than, you know, some conditioning, as you were talking about earlier, that society puts on us. And I think that people are pushing back against that now. And people are saying, I'm more concerned about, you know, how much I enjoy my life rather than how long I live.
Right. I think that's what this whole, at the beginning of the shutdown, there was this invisible threat to kill you. So everyone had to look at their fear of death, like, oh, did I do what I wanted to do? And then once you get into the near-death experience material, you see that almost every experiencer, when they go up and then are maybe sent back, there is no judgment. You judge yourself. And that's what we're doing here. Judging ourselves and being hard on ourselves when that wasn't really the intention of this physical experience. It was to co-create at a real high level with the universe, infinite intelligence, God, whatever you want to call it. So how do you see your work changing in the next few years? Do you feel that you've written a book? Mm-hmm. Are you going to start teaching classes, or what do you see is your path to helping more people? Because I can just see more and more people are going to need your work.
Yeah, I'm actually, this is interesting timing. I'm going through a pretty big transition with my business right now. I'm doing more speaking. You know, you and I were talking, I will be speaking at the IANS conference this fall. As we're recording this in August of 2022, I'm speaking at the Help a Parent Feel conference next week. So I'll be traveling to that.
Yeah.
I'm doing a trauma recovery summit coming up here this fall also. And I am developing, I'm taking a certification in something called positive intelligence. So I'm actually added to my grief guide and life coach. I'm a mental fitness trainer. So it's a way of helping people to really take these principles and train your mind to use them. So I'll be talking more about my mental fitness training and putting people through this 6-week program that helps them to develop the mental fitness that they need. And I'll probably I'm developing an online class right now also, so I can reach more people that people can sign up for. And it'll be like, you can just sign up for it and go through it at your leisure. That'll really cement some of these ideas about why I believe we don't die. I believe that is the most fundamental thing that people need to really understand to really get the most out of their lives and really alleviate fear and stress and everything, is understanding who you are, why you're here. Those are two most important things. Excuse me. So yeah, why am I here? Why am I going through this?
Yep.
Excuse me.
That's all right. So when you here, I'll get you get it. Do you have a glass of water?
I'm okay.
Okay. Okay. Well, okay. So why we are here, that's what a lot of what I do too with my work is I actually help people on their soul missions. Mm-hmm. And what I think is really the reason why I asked about fearlessness was that I see that over and over again, that their soul or their guides, however you want to explain it, the angelic support that we all have, they've been like dropping books off of bookshelves and showing them movies and taking them to somebody's house and showing how they're painting and saying, hey, you're supposed to do this too. And people don't get the memo.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting, I use analogies because I don't think we can really understand things directly. So, right. I'm a big fan of Swedenborg. He calls them correspondences. So there's a lot of correspondences in our world. And so I believe that we come here, we kind of play a game. It's like we put on these masks, we put on the veil. We've all heard of the veil. The veil we think of as the veil between the two worlds that keeps us all separated. I've heard someone say, and I can't remember who it was, the veil is actually like our body. This is what keeps us separate from this physical world, from the spiritual world, is being in this physical thing. So this, but this is like an avatar.
Right.
So my daughter and I used to like to play video games. When you play a video game, you take on an avatar. That's and your avatar has certain characteristics, has strengths, it has weaknesses. That's what we did when we came into these bodies. We put on this avatar and we said, let's go play this game and let's see what we can do in this limited capacity where we can't even fly, you know, where we have to eat, where we have to breathe. Let's experience this weakness. But one of the things we came to experience is fear, mm-hmm. and it's abandonment. The abandonment that we feel is actually part of the experience, because in spirit, we are so connected. We are so loved. We always know we're loved. We can never feel that feeling that we have when we're here. So we come here and we say, what would it be like to feel alone? And what would it feel like to feel helpless? So when you think about it that way, when these things come along, you, instead of saying, why is this happening? You're like, wow, isn't this interesting? You know, why is this happening? What's the lesson here? What am I supposed to do?
Exactly.
And I love survival shows, and I finally figured out why. Because
really? Uh-oh. Hope he'll be back in a second. Uh-oh. I don't know what else to do. Well, while we're waiting for Brian to come back, I will show you the IONS event that he is a speaker at. So this is our IONS event, the conference that's in very end of August to first week in September. And Brian Smith is one of the speakers here. The theme for the IONS event is Timeless Oneness, the luminous message of near death and other spiritually transformative experiences. And I've had the honor of meeting in person and or interviewing most of the people on these in this image, and they're just incredibly beautiful, beings. And what this whole opportunity is the opportunity is for you to learn more and more and more about knowing the research. There's 40 years of research for the near-death experience group that actually validates and has some sort of patterning to what people experience throughout the near-death experience. Of course, there's some variety, but some of these researchers like PMH Atwater I think she's created 18 books or something. I mean, they're amazing. So thank you for coming back. I was ad-libbing while you were gone. How are you doing? Whoops, are you still there, Brian? Oh. Okay. Well, let's see. So, what I'd love for people to know, let me show you Brian's website while we're also waiting for him to come back. And that way that you could get in touch with him, because the service that he's offering, it's both for the opportunity for parents to have resources after a death in their family, but it's also this great opportunity for personal growth. And as you can hear what he said, he's offering many more. Here we go. Hi.
Hi, sorry about that. My internet's been acting weird today.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay, well, I was about to show your website. I'm doing a song and dance here.
Yeah, really. Sorry about that.
That's
yeah.
all right. That's all right. It's all perfect. However it works out, it's just perfect. And we both have our yellow glasses on.
Yeah.
So you were saying, you were talking about, originally you were talking about that you're going to have more things to offer because you're going deeper into the it's not emotional intelligence, but it's your brain functioning, your thoughts are things.
Yeah. Actually what I'm going to be teaching is actually a little bit, it's similar to emotional intelligence, but it's really understanding how our minds work and so that old analogy of the devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other shoulder, or if you've ever heard the story, the Cherokee story, the two wolves, you know, which one wins, the wolf inside you, the jealousy, the greed, the fear. It's really based upon that. So it's really understanding these self-saboteuring voices we have in ourselves that are a natural part of being human and being able to turn those down and turn the other ones up. So I will be offering that as well. But I was saying that I think that it's really important for people to understand why we are here, that we came here to have these experiences. They're not a bug. You know, sometimes people will say, why would God create the world like this where there's pain and there's, quote, evil? We came there to go through this. And I was telling about the survivor shows. I love these shows, and I watch them, and people, you go, why would someone go spend 75 days alone in the Arctic with nothing but 10 tools and a camera? You know, why would you put yourself through that? Because humans like that challenge and the growth. And when I watch these shows, it's amazing the spiritual growth that people go through when they go through these hardships that are self-inflicted, that they know they put themselves through. And I believe that's a perfect analogy to the human condition. We come here, we're basically stranded on an island. We feel alone, we feel abandoned, we feel all the fear, and then we grow from it. And that's what I think is what I really want to get across to people.
Well, I have a question about that, because I feel like my soul projected this avatar from wherever you want to. I kind of want to visualize it out there, and that may have created this. And but if my soul decided what game to play and set this all up, everything's for me, even though it may be painful. Mm-hmm. But when you say that to someone who's experienced a loss or is in disappointment, that doesn't land very well. Is there right. something you suggest that you should say instead?
Well, the thing about this teaching is, it's as the Bible would say, this is a hard teaching. This is a hard, and we don't want to throw it around cavalierly. Right. So what we don't want to do is walk up to a person who's just lost a loved one and say, oh, don't worry, it's all a game. Oh, don't worry, they're not really God. You know, your pain is not real. The thing is, the pain is very real. The pain is not an illusion. We are so engrossed in this game that we really, really feel the pain. And so this is not about spiritual bypassing. This is not about saying your pain isn't real. So this is something you need to be very careful with. And I don't talk to people that are early in their journey about this. These are advanced concepts I'm sharing with you, where I'm trying to get people to go when we get there. The first thing is, we want to do is we want to acknowledge the fact that the pain is real.
Right.
That, you know, that we are, but you're never truly alone, right? There's always someone there. You might feel like you're alone. And what I try to get people to say is, like, what I want you to say is, I want you to have hope that you can have hope. Because right now you don't even know that you can hope. So the first step is, have hope that you can have hope. And I always go back to the Bible. You know, when the man prayed the prayer, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. Even that's enough of a prayer. So what I say to people, just trust me enough to start on this journey with me. I don't need you to go all the way. I don't want you to believe anything I'm telling you. Check it all out for yourself. But understand that you can get there, and there is hope. And that's what humans need more than anything. We can get through anything as long as we have hope. So that's what I would encourage you to say to someone that's going through that early part of the pain. It's like, I know it's terrible. I know it seems like there's no way out. And I'm not trying to convince you there's a way out. I just want you to believe that there might be a way out.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. Because Again, I've had more people pass in the last 2-3 months. I had a few people pass that were in their 40s, late 50s, mm-hmm. before COVID mm-hmm. that like shocked me. Yeah. And it was like, wow, that I thought I'd be playing, you know, even on a walker doing relay races with them.
Right. Yeah. So we get shocked by that. You know, my daughter passed, she was 15. She was healthy and it was just sudden. And I was saying about a friend of mine, his wife was 49, went in for minor surgery on her foot. And, you know, a couple of weeks later had a blood clot and just, again, suddenly.
Wow.
Someone my wife is very, very close to, you know, and again, someone not even 50. So, you know, the old saying that tomorrow's not guaranteed to any of us, we all say it, but we don't really believe it.
Right.
You know, these things happen to other people. But when you're in the position I'm in, you understand that they don't happen just to other people. They can happen to any of us.
So the work that you're talking about doing that's like emotional intelligence, but it sounds like it also is like Joe Dispenza's work. Is it a little bit about that, where it's the repatterning your brain?
It is. It's really interesting because as I go through it, it's very similar to Buddhism. It's really understanding your mind, but it's not taught from a spiritual perspective. It's a totally scientifically based, you know, based on 4 different leading edge disciplines of science. It's well researched. It doesn't require you to believe anything spiritual, but if you're a spiritual person like I am and you hear this, and we use the term sage for our true self, which is our higher self or our soul. We use the term saboteurs, and we have one main saboteur. That's our ego. And what happens is, as we come into this world, we build up these, we talked about a little bit about earlier about we go through all these traumas when we're a kid and the conditioning. And so we say, okay, well, this will protect me. If I am a hypercritical person, that'll protect me. If I'm a controlling person, if I can just control everything around me, that'll protect me. If I'm a people pleaser, if I just do everything everybody wants. So we develop these little personas that are inside our true persona that we think are going to protect us, and they really don't. So what this positive intelligence is about is understanding when our sage is speaking, understanding when one of our saboteurs is speaking, being able to intercept that and say, okay, I know that's a saboteur, switching to our sage mode, and then saying, how do I approach this problem from a sage perspective? How do I approach this from a problem from our higher soul? So it's all different language for the same thing. But the thing I like about it is, it's a very systematic approach, and we take people through each step, what each one of your saboteurs is, how your sage works. How do you switch? I know I'm supposed to switch, but how do I do that? And we can help people figure out, how do I make that switch in the moment when I'm getting caught? And it's about there's a lot of mindfulness. We use something we call the PQ rep, which is a very like a mini meditation thing. Like, how do I bring myself back to where I truly am right now and not get hijacked? So it's about all of that stuff. And I'm really, really excited about it because it changes the way you do everything in your life.
That's right. Because right now we're working, if we're not mindful, if we haven't done the work, even though there still will be more work to do or else we wouldn't be here. We are triggered every other second. And you get to choose like, and wonder what that was that triggered you, because it's primal almost.
It is. It's exactly, you're exactly right. It is primal. And the thing is, the ego gets a bad rap in the spiritual world. We're like, if we got rid of our egos, it'll be okay. When you can't get rid of your ego is what keeps you alive. Ego is what tells you you're a separate soul, a separate body, that you have to feed yourself, that you have to clothe yourself, that you have to defend yourself. So these are all parts. So the ego is not a bad thing, but when the ego is in control, that's a bad thing. So what we need to do is tell our ego, okay, I know you're trying to protect me. I got that. I appreciate you doing that for me, ego, but I don't need to be in my ego all the time.
Right.
And it's reminding ourselves that, yeah, we're in a game, you know? And, you know, the thing about my daughter transitioning early, I know that she's okay. I know that she's still with me. But I still have to play the game, right? So sometimes I get caught up in the game, like we all do. It's a great game. It's a totally immersive experience,
right?
And we get caught up in it. And so this is reminding us, this isn't what's real. This isn't what's permanent. This isn't, you know, what's permanent is love. What's permanent is the relationships we create. That's what's permanent. But everything else around us, it all fades away.
That's right. And the opportunity is to see that and see what you can do to make a difference. So let's talk about the soul phone and the, because I don't know anything about it. Could you just give me a little bit? So
sure.
The Cliff Notes.
Yeah, the soul phone is a technology that Dr. Gary Schwartz at the University of Arizona has been working on for several years now. And it's really, and just very short, it's a way to communicate with people, as Gary calls them, post-material persons, people on the other side. And we have demonstrated that that's possible. It's not where it's going to be, where it's going to be like reliable as in a phone. When people think of cell phone, they think we're going to be able to call the other side. And that's ultimately the goal. But it's technology to be able to communicate with people on the other side. Now, that sounds pretty wild, but again, if you've looked at anything like instrumental trans communications or ITCs, we know our loved ones have been messing with electronics for decades, you know, messing with our telephones, messing with our televisions, our radios, flicking lights and stuff like that. So people that are post-material can have some small influence in the physical world. So it's actually creating technology that's optimized for that, so they don't have to use, for example, your cell phone. Or I have a friend that communicates with the people on the other side on his Apple Watch, but he happens to be a physical medium. So that's what the technology is. It's coming along. I think it'll be here soon.
So is that like Sonia Rinaldi's work?
It's similar to what Sonia Rinaldi's doing. A couple of differences. Sonia Rinaldi, I believe, is a physical medium. Sonia Rinaldi does incredible things, but it has to be Sonia Rinaldi. I don't think you can take her equipment out of the lab, give it to somebody else, and they can do it.
That makes sense.
What Gary is working on is technology that is specialized so that it doesn't have to be a medium necessarily that uses it. And my friend I was telling you that communicates on the Apple Watch, he's had an NDE. He is a physical medium. He can create app ports and stuff like that. So people on the other side can use, I think, his energy to control these devices. So just in a nutshell, the technology that Gary's working on, we're working on with the soul phone, is specialized so that people, post-material people, can use it, and it'll be much more reliable and much faster.
Well, I did watch the documentary for Sonia Rinaldi, and I followed Sandra Champlain and her excitement with all of it. And the first time I heard about it was from Roberta Grimes, when Roberta Grimes came here to speak. And she actually showed pictures of the other side. They're black and white. Yeah. But it was like, wow, who's got the technology to see the other dimension?
She's actually done some moving images also. She's right. Done some pretty incredible things. And there's a documentary called Calling Earth. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but if you haven't, there's a documentary called Calling. There's been all kinds of ITCs across the years, people getting images on film, you know, voices over radios. So I don't know a lot about Sonia's work. I do know it's incredible. I do believe that it's very real. It's different from what Gary's doing and that Gary's developing this technology.
Okay. So, and are you actively working with him, or are you one of the people that he's using as a test?
I am the vice president of the foundation, which is our initial responsibility was raising money for the project. And now it's kind of like publicity and support. So Gary's working at the University of Arizona. I don't work with Gary. I'm not saying that I do work with him, but I work in support of the soul phone.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'd like to know more of that after we're done. Yeah. I'm very excited about that because I somehow sense all of it from my knowing, but I don't have an appliance.
And right.
I'm not really a medium. I don't really feel like I have that skill, although I'm psychic and intuitive, but I don't necessarily, I'm not trying to do that. But okay, so then could you talk a little bit about helping parents heal, and then we'll go to your presentation or a little bit about IONS.
Sure. Okay. Helping Parents Heal is an organization, international organization, peer to peer. I don't know how many parents there are now, probably approaching 20,000, but don't hold me to that number. It's rapidly growing, started by Elizabeth Boisson and Mark Ireland. I've been a member of Helping Parents Heal, I guess, for about 6 years now. I'm on the board. We're having our second conference next week. This, as I said, this is August 11th. We're recording this 2022. So we're having a conference in Arizona next week. It's going to be incredible speakers, but I've worked with parents from literally all over the world. There's a Facebook group called Helping Parents Heal. It's open to any parents who have lost children. There's no charge and no dues. They have incredible meetings on pretty much a weekly basis with leaders in the field of afterlife. We call ourselves Shining Light Parents. We believe that our children are shining lights, our children who are passed in the spirit. And our aspiration is to be shining lights for people that are here. So that's Helping Parents Heal. And I'm speaking at the conference next week, and I'm really excited about doing that.
Well, you are a shining light. That's why I was so excited to talk to you again, to see what was going on, because I do think that what you're doing is so valuable for everyone. I whether or not it's a parent that's lost a child, in a lot of ways, just the polarity of all this time is almost, whether they've gone to non-physical, lots of people, their families have all broken up. During this time period, we're in this high polarity time period where it's political. It almost every subject can be not weaponized, but made into a polarity subject.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, you know, it's interesting as a coach, and I've taken some marketing things for coaching. They're like, choose your avatar, your perfect client.
Right,
and,
right.
And the reality is most of my clients are people who have lost children because of my experience and the organizations I'm associated with. But I also have clients that have not lost children, have lost boyfriends, have lost pets, just stuck in life in general. As you mentioned, COVID, we can you can grieve the loss of anything.
Right.
So it could be the loss of your freedom. I truly believe it could be the loss of knowing who you are, which is 99.9% of the people walk around on the planet.
Yeah.
I think that I know that my mission is to help people to remember who they are. That's where it really all comes down to. There's specifics, you know, it's like, what do you need and how do we work on it? But that's what it really all comes down to, is like understanding who you are and why you're here.
That's perfect. Yep. I agree. My sole mission is to help as many people wake up to their divinity.
Yeah.
So yep. So perfect. So would you like me to show the IONS?
Yes, absolutely.
Website real quick. I did show it before while we were going on and off, but I'll show it again. And this way you can say something intelligent about it while I was just kind of doing what I could do. Okay. Oops. Let me bring it back up. Here we go. Have to be in two screens to do this.
Yeah, I understand.
Okay, here we go. So
yeah. I was really excited. IONS asked me back to speak again. This is my second time speaking at the IONS conference. And I'm sure, as you said, and everybody listening, you probably already know, it's International Association for Near-Death Studies, the largest international organization for near-death that there is. I see PMH at Water up there. She is amazing. I've interviewed her 3 times on my podcast. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm looking forward to seeing Mary Neal. I met Mark Anthony, so I know some of the people there. It's the near-death experience, I believe, is so key. You know, Ken Ring did a lot of research on near-death experiences and the changes that near-death experiencers have. But what he found out that was really amazing is studying near-death experiences, you can get the same benefits of people that have near-death experiences without all the trauma.
Right.
So I spent a lot of time studying in-depth experiences. I've interviewed probably 50 people that have had NDEs. My talk at the IANS conference is going to be on the oneness of the near-death experiences, what it teaches us about being one. And, you know, we use that phrase a lot. And I think a lot of people think it's kind of cool. It's an analogy. It's actually literally true that we are all one. And again, that's one of the things that will change your life when you really understand it.
Yes. Beautiful. So the opportunity that I'm hoping everyone can see is to definitely get in touch with you. Because no matter where they are in their lives, whether they've lost a loved one or not, we're going through huge times of change. And the tools that you use that are helping people in a very delicate time point of their lives. I mean, they're just like you said, you weren't sure you wanted to stay here afterwards. Well, there's lots of people. I hear people saying stuff like that all the time now,
yeah.
Where they just in passing go, oh, I wish I was gone too. And it's like, you know, there's a game still on here. And we need as many bright lights as possible to help us turn the ship around, because we're going from this old way of being into a peaceful way of being. And we need people that get that and want to play the game in that way.
Yeah. You know, the thing is that coming back to the veil that we put on, it's almost too good, because we not only agree to come here, we want to come here. We are participants. We chose. So a lot of people feel like victims. You know, right. I'm here against my will. I didn't ask to be born. Well, yeah, you kind of did. I believe that you did. I believe that you asked to be here. Now, it doesn't mean that there aren't times when we don't feel like we want to be here anymore. And again, going back to the survival shows that I love, these people, there are times of like, why did I do this? Why am I here? But the thing about it is the harder the challenge, the sweeter the victory. And this is the thing that humans do. We set up challenges for ourselves. And if you think about it, we do it in all aspects of our life. People go take up golf. Golf is one of the most frustrating games there is. Why does anybody play golf? Because it's such great satisfaction when you can actually do it. So if you think about it, you know, we do set up challenges for ourselves in life. I was talking to someone one day, and they said, I was saying that, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing my daughter again. And they said, well, that's terrible. That's morbid that you all you can think about is dying. And I said, that's not true. And they said, well, that means your life isn't worth living. I said, that's not true either. So when I went to school at Ohio State, I majored in chemical engineering. It was hard. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done. I went there for 4 years, and all I could do was I couldn't wait to graduate.
Right.
But I knew when I graduated, I would have that degree that I had gone after. That's what this life is like.
Yep.
We sign up for it. We say, I'm going to go for that. I'm going to go for the hard one. And I look at the people that come to me, the people that have lost multiple children, the people who have been sexually abused, the people who have been physically abused, the people that have been homeless, you know, the people that I interview. And I look at them like, you chose a really hard life because you really wanted to grow. Or it might have been in service to the people around you. But anyway, I'm like, you're the true heroes. You're the true strong people of the world. It's not that people have cushy lives. Anybody can live a cushy life. You know, it's you're the heroes.
Well, this is a time, I think, to kind of wake us all up. And I mean, never before in history has there been such quick communication from all around the world, so that you can know about every disaster and every problem that ever existed, and as an empath feel it yourself. But this is also the time to see that there's a possibility for us to be much more loving of ourselves, which is what you're talking about. A lot of this is self-love work that turns into
you're absolutely right. I couldn't agree more. It is a time of great challenge, but any time of great challenge is also a time of great opportunity.
Right.
So, and that's one of the things in the work that I do is help people say, okay, what's the opportunity in this? We know what we're missing. We know what we've lost. We know what grief we have, but what's the opportunity in this? And how do I turn it into an opportunity?
Yeah.
How do I take, you know, and it was funny because not funny, but when I was thinking about doing this work, I'm like, do I want to exploit the passing of my daughter? Do I want to, you know, make money off of the passing of my daughter? And that was my saboteur speaking, going back to the positive intelligence language. That was Satan talking to me. That was a devil on one shoulder talking to me. And that's what we do to ourselves. We don't even need other people to judge us. We start judging ourselves.
That's right.
So I'm like, no, that's not what I'm doing. I'm honoring my daughter. I'm taking her along with me. And I believe that her passing was intended to set this up, that it was a setup.
Right. I totally agree with that. Although I don't know that if I was in deep grief that I could see that.
Oh,
it sounds like everything's in hindsight, right?
I want to make that clear. And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I want to make that very clear to people. 7 years. This is 7 years out. This came to me 3 years ago. So it was 4 years. I was working with Helping Parents Heal and I was helping other parents, but I wasn't where I am now. Right. And it's been 7 years of really intense work. I mean, this is what I do night and day right now. This is what I do.
Wow.
So it's not easy to get to, and I don't mean to brag about where I am because I still have rough times, but it's work. And I was talking with someone yesterday and we were talking about the idea of work and like people shy away from work. And I'm like, but you're living a life right now where you're not happy and you're miserable and you're tired all the time. So if you do the work, you can, it's less work in the long run. Once you start doing the work,
you free up that energy, the potent pain and anger, grief have huge amount of energy in them. Yeah, and when you free that up, that whole, that's your creative ability right there. Right, once you free that. So thank you so much, Brian. I know that I hope as many people as possible will share this interview and that you will, people will find their way to you because I think you're such a gift. Thank you so much for everything you do. And again, let's make sure how everyone can get a hold of you.
Yeah, it's www.grief2growth.com. So www.grief2growth.com. You can find my podcast there, my YouTube channel and everything. And you can reach out to me directly if you like.
Yes. And as a fellow Buckeye, I just think that this path to kindness and self-knowing and to your power is really the whole key to happiness right now. So thank you so much, Brian. I can't wait to hear what you do next. I want to hear about this class that you're putting together and everything. So
absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy. Good seeing you again.
Thank you. Yeah. Take care.